Welcome, Hua, to the Indie Worldwide podcast. You have been a member of our community for ages, long time, like years, but you just started something new that you wanted to talk about and that I'm excited to ask you questions about. It's called Typogram. It's a platform to design your brand, and that's all I know about it. So tell me more.
Sure. So actually, even though it seems like we just It's new. We're doing grand launch for it, but it's actually an idea we've been working on for at least, I think, like 2 years. Yeah, at least a year,
oh, okay.
A year or 2 years. Yeah. So we've been like testing it with users, and this is our grand launch. So Typogram is a logo design tool for founders and entrepreneurs and small business owners. Essentially, people who are not professional designers. What it does is that it makes logo design easy for people who, and branding for people who doesn't have a design background. So normally, when you don't have a design background and you're an entrepreneur or founder, what you do is you either use, if you need a branding, you either go to one of the platforms like Fiverr or Upwork or something to hire a freelancer to do it for you. We interviewed a lot of people, and that process can be very tiring, can be very time consuming, and sometimes you don't necessarily get the results that you are hoping for. It's very unproductive for you because there's a lot of communication back and forth, and sometimes that's not fruitful when you have so many things to do. Another thing is you could try to do it yourselves, but a lot of design tools nowadays, like the Adobe programs, for example, they're really geared towards professionals. So it's usually loaded with a lot of more advanced features that normal people, non-professionals, will find difficult. There is more beginner-friendly tool like Canva, for example, but though Canva is really geared towards making marketing graphic rather than branding and logo specifically. So we really want to create something that makes branding and logo fun. It's not like randomly generating stuff. It's more like maybe you do it yourself, you feel confident, you feel creative actually making something you're proud of. So that's kind of what we want to do. So we made this thing called Typogram. It's a logo design tool for entrepreneurs, and we try to educate them inside the app, show them that design is fun, and we have features that help them achieve, like make the ability to achieve certain professional results easier. Yeah.
I'm checking out the demo you have on your website, and it looks like it does a lot more than other like logo generators I've seen. It seems like I've done the logo generator thing before, where you put in your name, you choose a couple attributes, and it spits out a logo, and that's kind of take it or leave it. Whereas your platform seems to be like a full like editing suite of design tools, all kind of focused around branding. So this seems like a lot more.
Yeah, that's you're exactly right. It's not a random logo generator, and both me and my co-founder were designers, so we want people to feel the joy of designing. That's the whole point of this tool. We want people to actually like design and feel creative, because I think everyone enjoys feeling creative. I think when we're young, we all like play stuff in kindergarten and like play with Play-Doh and be creative, right? But I think when you grow up, you kind of lose that part of you. So we want to make a tool that make people feel good about making things. And that's what we want to do with this design tool. Like, we want to make design things easy. And we use logo design as our first step to do that. So we have some features in there that essentially breaks down designing logo into certain methods, and then those features help people achieve those results a little easier. And then we also have some more advanced design technologies. I think they're like variable fonts, which we created into custom icons that allows users to kind of manipulate design easier. So they don't, they in our tool, they can just use sliders to manipulate certain icons instead of playing with the Bezier curves, which from our interview with a lot of users, that's something that they really struggle with as somebody who doesn't understand, who doesn't know, who doesn't usually use that kind of tool. Like they don't like to kind of tinkering with, like, I think it's really hard for a normal person to tinkering with the Bezier. So that's something we try to make a little bit, make a little easier for our users.
Do you see this as a tool for the like individual creator, the business owner, or is this somebody, is this something that like the designer would use, somebody who's selling their services as a like a brand creator?
That's a very interesting question you asked, because actually we have gotten our customers do come from both of those sides. One group are the people like you and me who are running business ourselves, who are entrepreneurs, who are creating their branding using our tool. Another group are the people who perhaps own, perhaps operate some kind of design agency, and they do freelance work. They do freelance work for and making logo is part of their freelance work. But the interesting observation about that is these are actually people who are also not professional designers. But for example, they're web developers, and then they make websites for other people, and then they would include perhaps a logo as part of that package. Another thing is like marketing consultants who perhaps give strategies or something like that, and they offer logo as part of the service. It's really interesting because I also gotten accountants who perhaps own like instead of just having their accounting work, they may also have some kind of community where they're talking to other accountants, kind of like indie worldwide, but for accountants, and then they create, they use our tool to create a logo for their community. So yeah, we got customers from both sides of those spectrums. So it was a really interesting development. And what's more interesting about that is that people who are offering those kind of services where they are offering logo as part of their service, they usually buy multiple licenses too. So I think that also gives us, it's teaching us that we have to do some kind of additional research or additional strategy on our pricing plan, maybe come up with some kind of bulk purchasing because we are running into those customers. But yeah, that was a really interesting development because we thought about that customer segment before, it didn't really come to us that they buy stuff like that until later. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's great problem to have. Uh-oh, they want to buy so many licenses.
Yeah.
No. You've been working on this for like 2 years. Yeah. What did you learn over those 2 years that made you want to refresh the brand and do this relaunch? What changed?
Yeah, so the first year, actually of last year, at the beginning, March 2022, we launched a pre-order deal. So that was when we got our initial batch of customers. Actually, when we launched our pre-order deal, we didn't have everything made. We didn't have all of our software made. We just kind of launched a pre-order deal with a video. Inside our video, maybe I'm not doing the best at storytelling this. So let's go back to 2021. So we've been doing user research just with first actually with no code tool, a no code version of software built in Notion with these users that we have gathered from entrepreneurship groups and stuff like that. So we actually been doing remote user testing for a whole year. So from that, we gathered some features that people were potentially interested in, and then we made the video and launched a pre-order deal in March 2022. And then from that pre-order deal, we have some of the software made after we did our user tests with no code. But then some of the other features were not completed because I think we wanted to understand. We were thinking about making them, but we just want to try this idea out, make sure people are willing to pay for it. So we launched a pre-order deal. And then from the pre-order deal, the pre-order took place for a year, and we actually made about close to $4,000. Which is I think really good considering we have almost no marketing budget, no marketing budget. Yeah, so it was all right. Yeah, and then that whole year we just updated our customers every day. Not every day, that's scary. Every month, every day would be too much. Every month, mm-hmm. about our product development process and what we're working on, the features we're building. And we kind of soft launched to them in January, like 2 months ago, and then did some iteration. So they went in, they used the product, told us what was working and what was not working. And then we spent 2 months adding some features that were missing. So now we are ready for the grand launch, and that's the one happening in this April. Yeah. So it's a 2 year of like kind of this like iteration and MVP process. And then talking to a lot of people in general, and understand like what they need. Cause I think as designers, and also both my co-founder and I, we're actually professors. We teach design at school. So we have a rough idea of how to talk about design, perhaps from like to somebody who's not a designer. But actually how a non-design person uses a tool is a whole different layer, a whole different layer of things. So of knowledge and of insights that we need to gain. So it was 2 years learning how to do that. It was kind of a process.
Poking around with the interface, because I signed up while we were on the call to play around with it. I can see, now that you've said it, I can see how this is sort of a design education tool on top of being a design tool, because you've broken up kind of all the components that go into branding into more bite-sized chunks where I can understand what the components are, brand personality, brand color, the typeface, the distinctive logo, like most people don't know what kerning is, but you go over to the kerning section and I'm assuming you're adjusting the space between letters and suddenly you understand what kerning is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty cool to see. I was going to ask if you've been working on this full time, but it sounds like you were able to afford working on this for the last 2 years because you've been also making money as a professor this whole time.
Yeah, I'm a part-time teacher. I'm a part-time teacher. Yes.
Part-time teacher.
So I think, yeah, I do spend about a good amount of time on this, like working on the app. So I'm privileged in that position. I think I spend maybe, it's really hard to divide, but I spend about like 75% working on the app. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I would say it's a really good chunk of time. Yeah.
But it's subsidized by the teaching job still, right? Or is where do you consider Typogram to be your like primary income at this point?
It's not my primary income. Yeah. So it's a combination of my personal saving, and then my teaching job, which doesn't pay much at all, and then a little bit of Typogram revenue. Yeah.
And this is a question for like a lot of people that are trying to bootstrap, they want to start their thing, and it's always like, how do I afford to do that? You know, like if you're raising money for your startup, the answer is clear. It's like, oh, I go raise money and then I have money and I use that money to pay myself while I build the startup. But for us bootstrappers, it's always a more complicated answer. Like a little bit of everything is usually what it comes down to, whatever works. So it's, I think, really useful and helpful to hear how people are making it work. Not the polished version, but like what actually goes into it. So in your case, you have a part-time job and you have savings. And the tool itself is starting to make money, and all those things together mean that you can bootstrap this thing. How did you and your co-founder meet and start working together?
Oh, it's actually a really fun story. So we actually met at a we both went to a typeface design program at the Cooper Union in New York City. So it's like an art slash engineering school, and then they actually offer one of the only typeface design program in the US
That's
certificate in the
cool.
US. Yeah, so yeah, we went there, learned from the best on how to make fonts. For example, the maker of well, not the maker, but people person who made Georgia, the
Georgia, the
default,
font.
yeah, Georgia the font, not Georgia the country, Georgia the font. And maybe and digitize Times New Roman. So it's pretty cool. That's how we met. And I feel like our personality really hit it off. And then we actually collaborated on several other projects before we started this one. One of them being a variable icon font called Anacons. It's a variable icon. We collaborated together along with Google Fonts. So, yeah, we work pretty well. That's how we decided to do Typogram together because, as everyone said, having a co-founder is a lot like, like being in, I think being marriage or being a couple or something, right? Like you have to really get along and then like fights will happen. So there needs to be a lot of trust. So yeah, that's how we met.
Have there been any like founder fights, or have you come up with any techniques for getting through those sort of co-founder challenges?
So we definitely had our fair share of arguments. I think a good way of doing that is actually have a really clear division of work. So because my co-founder and I were both designers, even though she came from a product design background and I came from a branding design background, we actually separate the design work really well for Typogram. So she's gonna handle all the product design and all the development slash engineering side of it, especially like the front end stuff. It's all her. And then I shall if she has design idea, she'll talk to me, she'll show me at meetings. And then I give her some feedback, but she is the owner of those things, of those designs. I can give her feedback, but I trust her to know what is best. And then it's the same for me. For me, I write the newsletter, I write the blog, I create all the graphics for that. And then sometimes I also code, so I also make the back end, some of the back end stuff, like for us as admins. And then she is the head of engineering, so she's gonna, if she wants me to add something, I follow her advice on that. But then in terms of content and then the development, oh, not the development, in terms of the content, and then all the stuff, the graphics we have on our blogs and then our newsletter, usually I'm in charge and she will just give me the power to do whatever I need to do.
To
So
come up
that's
with this division
one.
of labor where you're not stepping on each other's toes too much.
I think it's really important. And I handle most of the marketing side of things. I also send all the email and all that, and then she just does the product development. So I think it's really important for us to have that division, especially because we're both designers. I think there's too much work to do sometimes to fight over like we don't want to like spend forever fighting over like a button style or something like that, right? So yeah, it's really important to have that
Is
division.
that division of labor something you worked out on day one, or is that something you kind of negotiated over time?
To be honest, I think that is something very interestingly, that is something we worked out since day one. I think it's because like we didn't jump into this immediately, like working on Type 1, that's not the first project we did together. I think it's something we developed over time because we collaborated on several things. And then that's just the way we work. Yeah, that's just the way we work together. Even when we did any kind of website, I'm always the one who wrote all the content, and then she is the one that determines what kind of interaction. Sometimes she will have me maybe like design a couple of pages or a couple of interactions on something. But I always trust her to be the leader slash the design director, product owner for those kind of stuff.
I think you guys are the first double designer indie hacker team I've encountered. You sometimes see double engineers. Usually it's like, oh, I'm the engineer, they're the like business person or something like that. Do you find that gives you any advantages, or are there any things where you find yourself maybe struggling more because you have this same skill set, the skill set that overlaps for a large part?
Well, for one, I think we're both like geared more towards the introverted side. So I think that's definitely a struggle. I think I'm slightly more extroverted, so that's why sometimes I feel like maybe I will handle some of the marketing work or like emailing people or all that. And my co-founder is a little bit slightly more introverted to me in certain aspect. So I think that's one thing. Maybe we both a downside of having two designers is that like we're both more introverted. However, even though we're both designers, I think there are some. We have some really strong complementary skills. So I think that's a pro because even though we're both designers, she's actually, I would say she's almost like a front end developer. I would say she is a front end developer. So she has a very, very strong engineering background and she is incredibly detail oriented. And she's a perfectionist in her work. I think that's what makes her so good at what she does. So she is incredibly attuned to detail of things, and she always wants to make things perfect, which I think it's really good for product development. Whereas I feel like I'm more about like the big picture, like sticking to a deadline. Like if a communication needs to go out like today. Like I can't wait an hour. Like if I said something that's gonna go out at 5 p.m. It ends up being like 5:30. I just feel so uncomfortable. So I feel like I'm more like need to get it done today. Like I'm more of like perfection can wait. Like this needs to go. So I feel like in that aspect we work together really well because I rush. Sometimes I rush her to get things done. So I think in that aspect, our partnership really works. But I sometimes I do wish like maybe if I'm more extroverted, more like of like a business person, like some of those like engineer and business person combo, I think that would be really awesome too.
Yeah, I feel like extroversion is a skill I've had to learn how to do. Like, and some parts of it come naturally to me, like organizing people into events and things. But I don't know if I don't think I was born with that. I think I learned that skill, and then it was like, okay, this is the way I can be extroverted. Like, I know how to do this like pattern of outreach and connecting with people, so I'll just keep doing that. But when I see like the true extrovert like salesperson, sometimes I'm so impressed by how clearly they can communicate, how well they can pitch themselves and their ideas, and how quickly they can use those skills to get traction. It makes me a little jealous sometimes, and I want to do it too.
I definitely feel that. Actually, Anthony, I think you're so good at like just, like being, well, I don't want to say extroverted because now that I meet you, I feel like you're not. But you are good
I go
at
ahead and take that as a compliment.
I really mean that as a compliment because, sometimes when I meet extroverted people, like they're so extroverted, I'm a little taken back, But I feel like you actually have a really good combo of both things. Where did you first learn your skill of organizing people and do events and stuff like that?
Growing up as a kid, my parents were very involved in like community stuff. And so they were always organizing events. Like every year we'd organize a haunted house at this like community center. They'd host like car shows and like airplane ride events and like all these different things. And so I saw how they did that, like over a period of years of just like, you send out the invites, you pick the date, you design the flyers, you make some calls, secure, got your venue locked down, take care of the logistics, and then there's your event. So that's how it started. Once I got to college, I started working on these like student-led hackathons. So I was at the University of Maryland, and there's two big hackathons there that I helped organize called Technica and BitCamp, which are these like massive multi-day events with tons of moving parts and hundreds or thousands of people coming for multiple days. So
Oh,
that was
wow.
kind of like the big leagues of event planning. Then once I graduated college, I started doing like Indie Hackers events and then organizing things for Indie Worldwide, which after doing the hackathons felt much easier, almost no effort at all in comparison.
I'm actually from Maryland, so it's good to
Oh, cool.
hear that. Because I know I then it gives me some additional context, right? Because I know College Park, University of Maryland, College Park, it's like a huge school. So I imagine the hackathon must be like a really, really big event.
Yeah, they still do it every year. And they pull in, anywhere from like 1,000 to 2,000 or more students. They're over the entire weekend, 3-day weekend. That gave me a lot of experience. It also like was very stressful and made me think, I probably don't want to do this at this scale for a long time. More. But yeah, I think introverted indie hackers and extroverted indie hackers, like they both have kind of innate skills that can be very useful. Because a lot of the work we need to do is solo work. You're gotta spend a lot of time on the laptop just kind of like grinding things out and like building a product. And that's the introverted skill set, Can you do that for a while? And like, is your bar for socialization low enough that you can get the stuff you need to get done? Because working most jobs, you have coworkers, you have people that you can bounce ideas off of. But when you're starting, often for the first couple of years, it's really just you, maybe you and a co-founder, you and your customers, but it's not quite that same like team dynamic that you get with other career paths, or even the venture path, I feel like is you often get to socialize a bit faster sometimes because you have more money faster.
I agree. I think the hardest thing, and I'm Twitter, I definitely see people have similar pain, is that sometimes it's really hard to switch from like introverted work and extroverted work. Like you said, doing product development, doing engineering, doing design, it's all like introverted work, deep work. You sit in front of a computer for hours. You don't talk to anyone, you work, and you get really, really good work done. I think I feel the happiest when I do that. But then when you do any kind of marketing that really requires you to be in a mindset to talk to others, and sometimes I really have to get myself in a mindset to do that. Do you
Yeah,
have
it's a
any?
bit of a shift. It literally feels like shifting a car sometimes in my head. It's like I gotta like pull out my psyche from that like getting things done box, move it over into the like being a personable guy box who can make connections. And sometimes if I'm really deep in one box or the other, it's really hard to like pull out and switch to the other, which I think is why people will do. Like I see a lot of indie hackers will do like a 1 week marketing, 1 week building format, right? And I think that's because of the switching costs. I think I've gotten better at it over time. I used to be very grumpy if people tried to make me switch boxes, but now I can do it a little bit better. Or maybe I'm just spending way more time in the extroverted marketing box, whereas before I was almost always in the introverted getting things done box.
Yeah, could be. I have a lot of trouble doing the 1 week deep, 1 week introverted work, coding, whatever, 1 week marketing, just because it's almost too long for me. Yeah, it's too long for me. I think I do a whole week of like introverted work in front of my computer. The week after, I just don't want to do the marketing work. It's like I'm in that zone, and I spent a week. I'm definitely in a really good flow. Next week, I want to keep being in that flow. So, yeah, it's really hard to get out. I have better luck of doing like maybe one day or 2 day. Yeah, 2 day at most. Yeah, in
I
the
definitely
afternoon
like having that
slot.
full day of like, I'm just gonna work on stuff that I don't need to talk to other people for. Most days end up being broken down more by hour, though, versus the whole day.
I had that too. I had that too. Yeah. I think the most deep work I've done for the product for Typogram is that inside the app there are some custom variable icons that we made where you can just play with the slider instead of manipulate with the Bezier curves. It took me hours to draw those. And then yeah, I think for a whole week I just spent time drawing those icons because each icon has different states. Because I don't know if you ever tried variable font before, but you could manipulate the width, like certain style properties of variable fonts. So those are the same for our icons. Like they can be manipulated visually by the slider. So there are a lot of different interpolation of one icon. So yeah, how do you draw like essentially like several different stop points for those icons? So each icon really had a lot of different states. Yeah, so it was a whole week. I was just like drawing icons in this design program, and I just could not get. I had really good workflows. I could not get into the marketing zone, and that was like really difficult. And then the week after, I was still stuck in that flow, in that flow. So I was like, After that, I was just like, okay, maybe a week is a little too much. Yeah, I'm having like too much fun. So I
So
guess
here's a
it's
question for your designer brain.
yeah.
What is a brand? What is
Oh,
it?
I think it's really how you want your customer to feel about the product and what they think of, essentially like what they immediately think when they see your product.
Can you have a brand without a logo?
You can't have a brand without a logo. Actually, there are plenty of companies who's really, really successful at doing that. Like maybe eventually they'll have a logo, but then like somehow like that logo is not super important. So they can have a brand without a logo.
Do you have any examples of that maybe we would know?
It's not now, but and this would be actually an example from politics. A long time ago, like when Bernie Sanders was this like really liberal old guy from Vermont.
I think he still is a very liberal old guy from
He's still a
Vermont.
very liberal guy from Vermont. Exactly. But then like when he first appeared in the presidential scene. Candidate scene. I can't. I think like maybe like 2012. I don't know, or 2013. I'm not sure. Like in the beginning, like he didn't really have the logo he has now. Like in the beginning, I think people were just like making art for him, and like there are people because he really connected with that. His initial fan base was really like kind of like the artist, like hippie kind of type, like more on the more liberal. Side of things. So people like drew, like people just like drew stuff for him and like did performance art on Union Square in New York for him, and then did all these just like really creative stuff for him. So essentially he had a brand, and then like, but there's not a specific logo. Like you would think like Bernie, but you don't think a specific logo. You would just think all these like creative things that people did. So I think that would be a really good example of actually having a brand without a logo.
I think politicians are probably a great example because their logo is almost always just their name. And in America, it's just their name in red, white, and blue. That's your logo. But they still have a brand, right? Their brand is everything that they stand for, everything that they say and do. Their whole personality is their brand. But their logo is just the smallest part of that.
Unless, unless you have something really resonate with a certain fan base. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Like if you took Apple, right, which maybe has one of the strongest brands in the world, you got rid of the Apple logo completely, like got rid of the Apple, now it's like a curled up earthworm or whatever.
Yeah.
You're still going to recognize an iPhone. You're still going to recognize an iPad.
Yeah.
You would even still recognize like an Apple style, like presentation of a new product.
Mm-hmm.
Or if an Apple car rolled down the street tomorrow without the Apple logo on it, mm-hmm. a lot of people would probably peg it as an Apple product.
Mm-hmm. But then I think they have to be really, like they must launch that if they ever rebranded that, they must launch that with some kind of innovative product that's going to really add some value. Because I think the thing with Apple is that their brand is so strong that like people are really, when they see the mark, people really like it. So if they just suddenly decide to change it, it's gonna kind of decrease their brand value.
So is that what a logo is? Like a shorthand for the brand?
Yeah, it's a visual representation. It's a visual representation. Yeah, it's something, it's a distinctive mark that people will see and then connect it with your brand. Yeah.
So Apple, massive company. Bernie Sanders, like a huge national platform. What are the lessons that an indie hacker can take for their own brand? What's something that everybody should, if there's like three things everybody should know about branding and it's going to give you, you know, 80% of what you need for the first couple of years, what are those things that people should know?
Say that last part again, three things.
Yeah, three things that like any indie hacker should be aware of when they're making a brand for their product. I'm an indie hacker. I want to launch a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give it some kind of identity.
Mm-hmm.
What things should I be thinking about in order to execute on that?
Sure. Yeah. So first of all, you should think about making something simple and people could remember. That's really one of the number one traps that people get into when they're designing a logo is that they tend to have a lot of creative ideas, and then they would draw them and then they'll be like, oh, it all looks great. Let me combine those all amazing ideas into one single idea. And then you kind of end up, usually what will happen is that like you end up with something that's a little too complicated for what you're going for. A logo that has too many details, a lot of like intricate, like little things on there, you know? And I think for one, most of us, when we look at something for the first time, we don't understand it 100%, right? I think especially a logo, like when you look at it, there it's super complicated. It may mean something to the maker, but it doesn't mean anything to me as the customer. When I look at a logo, like I'm not gonna like kind of understand, like I'm just gonna see a really complicated logo, and I especially if it's combination of a bunch of ideas, it may not look like anything. It may just look like a really complicated graphic. So to me, right away, as a customer, that's not gonna really send a signal to what you're trying to do, or I'm not gonna understand what it is. So I think it's really important to be simple. There's a lot of simplicity is really important. Yeah. So number one advice I would give is just make whatever you're thinking simpler. Simpler, subtraction, minimalism. That's the number one advice I would give to somebody thinking about branding and logo design for the first time. If you're making a pet food company and you want to put your dog in there and then you want to give it all the little hair, you want to give it like the necklace, you want to do give it a bow and then have a jacket on. Maybe get rid of all those excessive details and just keep one part of the dog. Maybe it's the dog.
Mm.
Maybe it's just one paw. Eliminate, and then subtract. That's one advice I would give. Another advice I would give is I know it's really time consuming to maybe design it yourself. And I know as like a solo founder, probably there's so much things to do. But I think it's worth it if you sketch something out. If you just put some thoughts on a piece of paper, if you use typogram, you put your ideas down.
Thanks.
Yeah, put your ideas down and then like just do a sketch. Make a sketch. If you either use it in typogram or you decide to do it yourself, yay. But if if you don't use us, that's fine too. If you wanna go to Fiverr or somebody, you could at least show them something. Show them something. Show them your sketch. Show them the typeface you're thinking. Show them, like some inspirations or whatever. Show them logos of other companies you like. Show them some supplementary, show somebody your supplementary things so they either the person you're working with understand what you're going for, or in the end, you understand what you're going for. Okay, that's really the number one issue sometimes. Like people, they themselves, they have trouble perhaps narrowing their ideas and think about what they want. So that's why in Typogram we let you play around with different things so you get an idea. And we show you how it all works. Okay. And then number three is, so we said simplicity. We said perhaps create some kind of do some research, create inspiration, and try to sketch it out yourself. And then the last thing is I would pay attention to the font you're using. Yeah, like you want to make sure you don't use something ridiculous. You want to make sure you want to use something appropriate. In design school, we always say design. We always say like form follow function. So like whatever like things you're designing follows the function. So if you're making a software, like a piece of software, like a web app or something, and your logo is going to be like on your landing page, like the typeface for your logo needs to be like appropriate for your brand, right? Like if it's like it shouldn't, like for example, it shouldn't be in Papyrus or Comic Sans, right? Like it carries a specific tone, right? And also some of them just don't render well, They don't render well on mobile. On mobile you run into issues. And that actually, this point actually goes into the first point I was making about logos, which is simplicity. If you design something too complicated, when we're on a smaller screen, say it's a web app, when we're on a smaller screen, we go to your landing page, it's not gonna perform well, right? Your logo is gonna lose detail, and people won't be able to look at it correctly, like the way you intended, and that makes you look really unprofessional and makes people. Makes your product lose credibility, right? So those are simplicity. Try to sketch out something yourself to understand what you want. And I think it helps you think about like what your company is and what are some things it could do. And then the third, and also what kind of users you want to reach out to. And then third is trying to pick a good typeface that would perform the work. You wanted to perform for your logo and then eventually also for like whatever you're making, like your app or whatever. And all of this can be completed with low cost. It doesn't have, you don't have to hire like a big fancy agency or whatever. And you don't even have to go to like the more pricier platform like 99 Design, which I also heard it's a mixed result depending on how good your brief is. If you just do three things, even if you do go to one of those platforms like 99 Design, you're gonna get a better work a bring to you by other people if you have a better understanding of what you want. Yeah.
I feel like simplicity is a huge design hack for an indie hacker. It's like
Yes.
we hear the advice all the time to like cut things out of our MVP. Got to pick
Yes.
something small, and it definitely applies, I think, to your brand as well. You don't really know what your brand stands for yet if you're just launching something new. So if
Yes.
you launch something minimal, it's going to be faster, it's going to be cheaper, and you're not creating baggage for yourself either that you
Yes,
have to like
yes.
unwind later.
Yes, I agree. You can definitely have simplicity, but then also have unique and distinctiveness. Those two things can coexist. That's why things like Apple, things like even Tesla, the car, like that's why people like them, because there is some kind of subtraction going on in terms of aesthetics. So yeah,
Yeah,
I
but you
agree.
don't have to get
But
there on day one, you know?
yeah, you
Like,
don't get there on day one. It's not easy. Simplicity is not easy. Simplicity is harder. It's always easier to subtract than it is to add.
your logo can just be the name of your company.com and Helvetica or Impact or whatever for your MVP, and then we iterate.
That is a good way to go too. And sometimes it's the name of your company, but then you just add something very minimum, you add something very minimum. So I guess that could be a design hack too. Like for example, like maybe it's the name of your company plus just an icon at unexpected places, a really simple icon at unexpected places. Or like
Like
one.
the dot of the I is like a bell or something.
Or like one of like in your company name, just one letter looks slightly different. Sometimes it's really about the small elements. Small, simple step. A small, simple step that slightly deviates from the norm, and that makes people pay attention to you.
That's cool. Yeah, that's good advice. Well,
Yeah,
Hua, it was great to meet you. Hopefully see you at the next Indie Worldwide meetup in New York City or online. Where should people go to learn more about yourself, about the work that you're doing?
you can go to typogram.co to play with typogram. I also write a design newsletter, so if anyone's interested in design, they can subscribe to fontdiscovery.typogram.co. My co-founder also writes a built-in public newsletter at build.typogram.co. So if you want to learn more about the startup life side of things, her newsletter is a great resource too.
All right, wherever you're listening to this, YouTube, podcast, newsletter, somewhere there will be a link to Typogram that you can click.
Thanks
All right, well, thanks so much for coming on.
so much, Anthony.